It was spring break of 2007, and I was home from college during what felt like the worst semester of my life. Classes were extra hard for me that year, and not to mention, I had just gone through my first major breakup, and as a 19-year-old, I was still learning how to deal with that. So spring break was just what I needed. And to make things even better, my family had a timeshare on a cabin that was located in the woods just past Oneonta in upstate New York. I knew that I needed a break from the pressure of the real world and needed to find some peace of mind. So I asked my parents if I could spend a few days in the cabin if it was available. And to my luck, it was. And to my surprise, my parents were totally fine with it. We planned it out meticulously so that they wouldn't be worried about me. I was going to stay from Monday through Thursday, so I would need 4 days worth of food and water just in case the plumbing from the well wasn't working. After gathering all my supplies and packing my clothes, I hopped into my Subaru Outback and made my way to the cabin. It was about a 4-hour drive, but I just jammed out to some A Day to Remember, and the time flew by. In no time at all, I was at the cabin, and I began to bring my things inside. I checked the sink, and the plumbing seemed to be working fine. After getting settled in, I made my way around the property and just enjoyed taking in all the sights. To be honest, the first few days were just pure bliss. I couldn't think of anything I would have rather been doing. Nothing compared to the scenery of the hikes that I went on or the 2 fires that I had outside the first 2 nights I was there. It was great. I just listened to some music and let my mind wander. It wasn't until the 3rd day that things began to get a little strange. It was Wednesday, and I decided to go on one last hike before calling it a day. I walked down to my usual trail, which led to a small stream that I liked to take a break at and watch for a bit before heading back. And at first, everything was fine. However, on the walk back, I couldn't help but feel like I had 1,000 sets of eyes on me, like every movement I made was being watched. I tried to shake the feeling off, but it wouldn't go away. By the time I made it back to the cabin, the hair on my arms were standing straight up. I don't know what it was, but there was something wrong. Looking back on it, I wish I just decided to pack up and leave right then and there, but I decided to stay that last night. So I went inside the cabin and locked the door, and proceeded to make sure the 2 windows were shut tightly as well. After a bit, I had managed to calm down and was about to fall asleep. That was when I heard it. It sounded like breathing coming from the other side of the cabin door, which was next to the couch that I had been laying on. I froze. I couldn't catch my breath as I tried to listen for more breathing noises. But what I was met with was far worse. A quick, scratchy noise began to come from the other side of the door, as if something was trying to dig its way through. Then it stopped. I waited for a moment, as still as I could be, and that's when I heard it again. Only this time, it was to the right of the door, directly in front of where I was facing. It was as if it knew right where I was positioned. The scratching persisted for about 30 minutes, though it felt like hours. I didn't get any sleep that night, and as soon as the sun was up, I grabbed everything that I brought with me and bolted to my car. As I was sitting in the driver's seat, I was horrified at the sight of deep claw marks in the lower part of the cabin. An animal was definitely trying to get in that night, and I never went back to that cabin again. I was only 10 the last time that my family had gone to our cabin for a vacation. We used to go every year, but after that time, we stopped. which I was glad about because something really strange happened the last time I was there. It was me, my older sister, my mother, and my father. They had all gone to sleep and I was restless. I mean, it was early and I was 10, so I didn't know what to do with myself. I end up making the foolish decision to sneak out and stare at the stars. We didn't get those kinds of sights in the city, so I snuck out of the cabin as quietly as I could and made my way to the fire pit. The fire had long been put out, but it was a good place to sit and overlook the field near the cabin and see the stars. As I sat there, I looked out into the field, and at first, I couldn't tell what I was seeing. It looked like something was moving in the tree line just beyond the field. It wasn't until it stepped out into the light that I realized it was a man, and he appeared to be heading towards the woods on the other side of the field. As he made his way through the field, I could see more and more of what he was doing because of the moonlight. I noticed he was dragging something that looked heavy. My heart just about to stop, though, when I noticed he stopped moving and turned in my direction. I wasn't sure that he saw me until I noticed he lifted his hand, and I swear he waved. I was so scared, however, to my relief, he just kept on moving. I immediately went inside and didn't say anything about it to my parents. I didn't want to get in trouble for sneaking out. It wasn't until 5 years later, when we were all sitting outside of our home, enjoying some takeout by the pool, that I ended up bringing it up. I didn't think anything of it. We had just been talking about some scary things that happened to us, so I thought it would be a good one to share, but the look on my dad's face told me that I had said something that really freaked him out. That was when he explained to me why we had never gone back to that cabin. Apparently, 2 weeks after we had left and gone home, my parents were questioned by the police considering a body that they found near our cabin just a few days after we had left. Apparently, upon searching the area, police found 9 different bodies buried in the property. I will absolutely never forget what I saw that night, or how lucky I am still to be here. I was so excited to be getting back to the cabin with my cousins. It had been a few years since I had been able to join them on their weekend hunting trips, but finally, our schedules lined up and my parents let me go with them. It was just me, my 2 cousins, and their dad, my uncle. We made it to the cabin and began to unpack. The boys and I couldn't wait to get outside and run around the woods for a little while before it got dark. So, that's exactly what we did. We dropped our stuff off and immediately ran outside. We were out there for about 2 hours before my uncle called us in for dinner. When we got inside, he seemed a bit weird, but I didn't think anything of it. I just sat down and got ready for some dinner. That was when my uncle asked my older cousin if he remembered leaving the door open or anything like that. He seemed to think that a squirrel or some sort of animal had gotten in and had been rummaging through whatever they had left there. My cousin said no, and that was the end of that conversation. We didn't speak another word about it. We just enjoyed our pasta and talked about our plans for the next day. All through the meal, though, I couldn't help but shake the feeling like something was looking at us. Again, I just brushed it off like it was nothing and finished eating. After a few hours, it was time for bed. My cousins and I got to stay in the living room of the cabin on the pull-out couch and the reclining chair while my uncle slept in the room that was in the back of the cabin. It took a while because we didn't have a TV, but we eventually fell asleep. However, about an hour after finally passing out, I woke up to my younger cousin shaking me. When I asked him what he needed, he didn't move, but I noticed his eyes were locked onto the window. When I looked, I couldn't help but scream. On the other side of the window, I could see a full-grown man looking in at us. I yelled so loud that I startled everyone in the cabin awake. My older cousin and my uncle. It was so loud that even the man outside the window seemed shocked. My uncle came running out to ask me what happened. We explained everything, and without a second question, my uncle grabbed his cell phone and called the local police. They said they would be at the cabin in about 10 minutes. So until then, we all went into my uncle's room where he had his hunting rifle. And that was where we waited until the police arrived. After about 20 minutes of searching the woods, they found a man who had been hiding out in the bushes about a mile away. When they found him, the police said that he had a knife on him that looked like a kitchen knife. It was one of the ones from the cabin. To this day, the only conclusion that we could come up with is that the man had been staying in the cabin without my uncle knowing, and when we showed up, he had to leave, but he left prepared to come back and take the cabin by force. I'm thankful every day that my little cousin managed to see the man before anything bad could have happened.
I never had much of a family. Mom died with her folks having cut her off. Dad was in and out of psychiatric hospitals before he took his own life. The only living relative I was aware of was my paternal uncle. But one of the few dark secrets concerning my family that I actually knew was that my uncle blamed himself for my dad's death. As a result, he'd built himself a log cabin up in Maine and had been living in seclusion ever since. But since I only had a rough idea of where the cabin was, and even less of a desire to reach out to him, he was just as dead to me as my parents were. Because the truth is, I blamed him for my dad's death too. Having someone to direct my anger towards, someone to blame, it was the only thing that allowed me a measure of peace after a terrible, miserable childhood. Against all odds, by the summer of 2015, I actually built something of a life for myself out here in Boston area. I was an assistant manager of a brewery pub. I had a small but nice apartment. I even got a couple of dates here and there. I was firmly in the process of putting my old life behind me, and that felt better than I can possibly describe. Then came the letter that changed everything. It was from an attorney's office in Augusta, Maine. And as soon as I saw which state it was postmarked from, I had an inkling of the news that followed. Lo and behold, it was a letter stating that my uncle had died, and that this guy had been tasked with dividing my uncle's estate among his surviving relations. I'd always assumed he didn't have much money, and I was right about that, but that didn't mean I hadn't been allocated something in his last will and testament. Yet, irritatingly enough, I'd have to go all the way to Augusta to find out what it was. I gave the attorney's office a call, lied about being too busy to make the drive, and just asked them straight up what I'd been left in the will. So, imagine my curiosity when this guy tells me he has no idea what it is, that all he has is a key to a security deposit box located in an Augusta bank. He's been paid to ensure I open the box and understand the significance of the contents. Nothing more, his only motivation being that his payment is locked inside the box too. It sounded like the plot of a bad movie, and only once the attorney had assured me that he was deadly serious did I actually start to believe it. Part of me wanted nothing to do with it, and told me it'd be nothing but picking at old wounds, dragging up a past I'd worked so hard to leave behind. But peace of mind doesn't pay the bills, and as greedy as it sounds, if there was money to be had, I wanted a piece of it. So I took a half day one Friday in mid-July, the 17th or the 19th I think it was, and I began the 5.5 hour round trip to Augusta up in Maine. It's a pretty nice drive in the summertime, and the view's quiet and the growing feelings of dread for as long as they were able to. But as I pulled up outside the quaint, homely offices of the law firm, Stevens and Day, I felt like I was on the verge of a miniature panic attack. I'd gotten it into my head somehow that all I was going to get was a letter telling me some awful truth about my family that had ruined all the progress I'd made over the past 4 or 5 years. So, you can only imagine my trepidation as I meet with the attorney and drive over to Bangor Savings Bank to unlock the box with him. I was actually clammy with nerves by the time the bank manager ushered us into the room housing the deposit boxes, and when I cracked it open to reveal nothing but a wad of cash and a single letter, I thought my worst fears were confirmed. The attorney took the money, but when it came to me opening the letter, I was obviously hesitant. It reached the point where the guy asked me if I was actually going to read it, or if I wanted some time alone, when I hit him with what I thought was a pretty unusual request. I wanted him to read the letter for me, then summarize it as clinically and coldly as possible. I knew I wouldn't be able to bring myself to read it for a long, long time, yet at the same time, I had to know what it said. He was blood, and as much as I hated him, I knew that honoring his final message was, at a minimum, the right thing to do. I watched the attorney's face the whole time as he unsealed the envelope, took out the letter, and began reading. He briefly scanned the contents before a look of puzzlement came over his face, and sensing my impatience, he just showed me what was written. It wasn't some long-winded apology or explanation. It wasn't a goodbye or a dying request. All what was written were a set of numbers that I figured were coordinates and three scrawled words. Burn it all. When the attorney asked me what the significance of the coordinates were, I didn't have an answer for him. But all it took was a quick Google search to work out that they pointed to a seemingly random spot in the Debskonig Lakes wilderness area. I wasn't certain, but I was 90% sure that this was the location of his cabin, but whatever he wanted me to burn was a complete mystery to me. In the space of about 10 minutes, I went from wanting nothing more to do with such a grim situation to being consumed with morbid curiosity. My imagination went into overdrive, and I theorized on all the dangerously illegal or disgustingly immoral things he might have been up to out there. I just had to know more, because if he'd left some terrible, shameful legacy behind, you could bet I wanted to destroy it. The ride back to the Stevenson Day gave me an opportunity to politely grill the attorney on my uncle's death. I figured if he'd fallen ill or died at home, then someone must have seen the inside of his cabin. But according to the attorney, my uncle had driven himself to the hospital about a week before he died, and had made the deposit box arrangement with him months before. So for all intents and purposes, the only person that had ever seen the inside of that log cabin was my uncle. Before I left the guy's office, I asked him his advice, and I'll never forget what he said. "Well, as my grandpa used to say, sometimes things bury you if you don't bury them first." And he was right. I couldn't lose any more sleep over this nonsense. It almost killed me once before, and there was no way I was going to let that happen again. It was clear what needed to be done. I'd drive out to that cabin, do my uncle one last favor, and burn whatever horrible truth it contained to ashes. I planned to check into a nearby hotel, then set out at first light the next morning after 8 hours of sleep. But 8 hours sleep turned to be rather ambitious. When the clock on the motel wall ticked over to 2 a.m., I figured a better use of my time would be to scour Google Maps for the best route out to the cabin. Then, by the time the first slivers of blue dawn began to creep onto the horizon, I was packed up and ready to go. I didn't figure I'd need much, just a jerry can of gas and a box of matches, and those were easily procured. Then once I had one of those extra-large gas station coffees in my drinks holster, I was just about ready for the 3-hour drive out to the lakes. The entire drive, I had those three words just echoing around my skull. Burn it all. I've never been so fully consumed with curiosity in all my life. It was an ache, like that feeling when you hold your breath for too long and just need to let it all out. I had to know how my uncle had been living for the past 30 years and what it was he wanted me to burn. But to explore that cabin would be to risk my sanity, when I could just burn the thing to the ground and walk away and go on living. I tried so hard to make up my mind, but the truth is, I didn't know what I was going to do until I was face to face with the old rotten cabin. Face to face with the truth. When I was almost certain that I was within walking distance of the letter's coordinates, I parked my car up in an old lot near a trailhead, then headed northwest towards what I assumed was going to be the cabin. But about a half hour or so into my hike, I began to notice something rather unusual about the area's flora, and it wasn't long before one particular sight stopped me dead in my tracks. There, lying in the dirt in front of me, was what looked like a mix between a pile of beef mince and a brain. At first glance, I really did think it was living, or at least once living flesh. The shade and texture of it was almost identical to meat, but I soon realized that what I was looking at was actually a kind of fungus. I later discovered it to be Gyromitra escalenta, or more commonly, brain fungus. And although it can be highly poisonous, it's not an uncommon sight in northeastern forests. However, what was uncommon was the frequency with which I sighted the distinct-looking fungus around the woods. And those weren't the only weird mushrooms I found out there, and the next variety I saw was even creepier than the last. While the brain fungus was just kind of gross-looking, I mistook the devil's tooth mushrooms for chunks of bloody human tissue. Go ahead and look those up, by the way, you'll see what I mean. Younger specimens basically bleed this bright red substance that I later discovered contains anticoagulant properties. In plain English, it looks like blood, and it can make you bleed easier. Creepy, right? But again, not nearly as creepy as just how many of the disgusting little things were dotted around the forest. They were everywhere. Sometimes two or three around the base of every tree, and the closer I got to the coordinates, the more there seemed to be. I had this GPS app on my phone that was helping me keep track of where I was, and I didn't have to worry about the cell service cutting out because it worked offline too. But as it turned out, I didn't need any fancy equipment to find my way to the cabin. All I had to do was follow the mushrooms. I smelled the cabin before I saw it. It was this pungent, almost stewed meat smell, but with a sickly rotten taint to it, and by the time I actually laid eyes on the filthy wooden paneling through the trees, I almost had to cover my mouth and nose in order to push forward. The thing was covered in those brain fungus and devil tooth mushrooms, nestled in where the wood met the soil or where moisture and dank was able to cling under windowsills. I can't stress how utterly exhausted I was by this point either. It was almost noon, one of those cloudy summer days that just seals all the humidity in like a lid on a jar, and I've been hiking with about 2 gallons of gasoline in my backpack, which, let me tell you, was no easy feat. I just want to get things over with so I could set off back to my car. But a thought struck me as I was pulling a gas can from my backpack. I had no idea what the smell was. If it was due to some kind of flammable gas, maybe that's what my uncle meant when he told me to burn it all. Maybe it was primed to ignite and all I needed to do was toss a match on it. But if it was indeed flammable, the intensity of the fumes meant I'd risk blowing myself up if I just tossed on an open flame from arm's length. So that raised the question of just what was making that god-awful stench. But finding out meant looking into the cabin, something I'd promised myself I wouldn't do. But what harm could one little peek do? The journey out here had been depressing and confusing enough. Seeing how some miserable old hermit lived his life couldn't be so bad, could it? Of course not. So why was I so terrified to open that front door? Well, as it turns out, it's because I just couldn't compute what I'd see on the other side. The inside of the cabin was just as infested with fungus as the outside, and it was so humid in there that it felt like a freaking sauna. The first thing I saw as I attempted to cover my mouth and nose with the neck of my t-shirt was a huge pot on the stove. My uncle had been dead for about a week by this point, but before he died, he'd filled that pot with enough of whatever it was that it was only just beginning to boil down as it slowly simmered away. The opening to the pot was stuffed with rubber piping, arterial little tubes that seemed to run all over the cabin, each pumping out a kind of vapor that simply must have been the source of the stench. The place looked like a cross between a drug factory and some mad scientist's lab. There were sodden, moldy books lying on the floor, a blackboard with some indecipherable pictograms on it. And that was just about all I could get a glimpse of before my eyes started to water and I was eventually forced to retreat from the open door where I promptly vomited. Those fumes, they were just unbearable. Like my head was spinning and I honestly thought that I might pass out for a moment. I have no idea what he was doing in there. All I know is that it had something to do with all those mushrooms. There were so many of them there that I thought I could almost hear them moving or something. It was this repulsive, intestinal hum that made my skin crawl to listen to. After I collected myself, I wrapped my shirt around my face to create a kind of makeshift respirator, then set about emptying the contents of the gas can all over the outer wall of the cabin. Then, with a flick of a match, it all went up in flames. And I know it was just my ears playing tricks on me, that what I heard was just the sound of moisture escaping the soaked wood. But I'd have sworn I heard the screams of that fungus as it burned. When I finally drove back home, I was no more enlightened than I had been before. If anything, I only had more unanswerable questions, more to keep me up at night when that not knowing anxiety gets too much to bear. But still, I'm glad I burned that cabin down, that I didn't leave whatever darkness it contained to be stumbled on by somebody else. I thought I might hear about it in the news too, and for a day or two I wondered if I'd accidentally started some kind of forest fire. But no news ever came, not even so much as a peep. And I figured that maybe it wasn't just my uncle who wanted whatever was up there to stay secret, that it all runs deeper than I could possibly imagine. But I try not to think about it anymore. Like I said, I've made something of a life for myself, even got a long-term girlfriend who I've been talking about marriage and kids with, and I'll be darned if I do anything to mess that up. And if you're ever out near the Debsconic Lakes, keep an eye out for those mushrooms. Because if you start seeing a little too many of them, it might be better for you if you went back the way you came.
I want to start out by saying that I'm a 25-year-old male, average but broad build, and I'm somewhat taller at 6'1", so not what you'd usually consider an easy target or victim. I'm an avid outdoorsman. I love being in the middle of the woods, either with friends or alone. There's a certain peace I find when I'm sitting alone by a stream with nothing but nature all around me. I specifically love hiking, and I usually start hiking in the spring. My favorite spot to hike locally is in a small town in southwest Ohio. This is normally a very peaceful, quiet, and relaxing place. Usually you'll run into a couple of other hikers or families swimming in the creek nearby, or just a few animals along your trail. This day, however, well, it turned out to be entirely different. It started off like every other hiking trip. I grabbed my pocket knife and water bottle and headed toward my spot. Once I arrived, I picked my favorite trail and started down the loop. It was a windy day in mid-spring, and I had been hiking for about half an hour when I then heard what sounded like a woman screaming for help in the distance. I paused momentarily at the bottom of a small incline, listening closely when I heard the scream yet again. At this time, I ran up the incline to see if there was someone injured nearby who maybe needed help. But when I reached the top of the small hill, my stomach wrenched and I got the feeling that I should just go on about my business. So following my instincts, I did just that. After that, I stopped a ways up ahead and listened again. I hadn't heard the noise in a while, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't hear it again. The wind blew once more, and the noise came back as the trees swayed back and forth. I decided that the noise was from the trees, and just kept on my trail. As I tried to shake the eerie sick feeling in my stomach, I rounded a bend in the trail, and as I got to the clearing around the brush, I saw a man on his hands and knees on the ground, with his face in the dirt. The man had a dog with him, and he was wearing a backpack. I figured that he had dropped something and was looking for it, so I just kept heading his way down the trail. As I drew closer, the man looked up at me and stood up from the ground. He was a larger guy, probably about 6'4" if I had to guess. Pretty stocky build. His face looked like that of a drug user. He blocked my path. I stopped about 10 feet from him, standing facing him, maintaining eye contact and distance. He had asked me if I ever smelled these flowers, as he pointed to them on the ground. I then said, "No, I haven't," as friendly as I could at the time. He then looked at me and said,
"Every spring, I have to get down on my hands and knees and smell these flowers. They're just nothing like you'll ever smell."
I kinda just gave a, "That's cool." He paused for a few seconds, and I could tell he was sizing me up. After his pause, he said,
"Yeah, you should smell them sometime."
And he paused again, halfway motioning for me to get down and smell these flowers. "Fuck that," I said. "Yeah, maybe I will some other time." And he then gave me a look of subtle frustration, giving another long pause. I broke the silence by telling him that he has a really pretty dog.
"Yeah, she's a really good girl,"
he said. At which point then, I decided I had enough of this interaction, and I said, "Alright, well, I'm gonna keep on my way then." The man paused again, and he just told me to take care, and then turned to keep going down the opposite direction of me. I started walking again, and after about 5 seconds, I peered over my shoulder just to make sure that he wasn't following me. But he was gone. He had completely vanished from the trail in just a couple of seconds. You'd think I would be kind of relieved to be away from him, but not knowing where he was really put me on high alert. I decided to try and enjoy the rest of my hike and went down this trail that I had always seen but never explored. The trail then went about a quarter mile through a field with trees on each side of the trail. Then at a sign with a map, split off into three mini trails that all led to backpacker campsites. As I went down the trail, I stopped for a second to use the bathroom and then check over my shoulder again. Nothing. I made it to the sign at the split, and my stomach wrenched again, telling me not to go down that trail anymore, to turn back. So I did. I turned back, and I started back down the trail to the main loop. I pulled my knife from my pocket and had it ready in my hand. I was about halfway back to the main loop when I then saw the man yet again in the distance. He had doubled back and was now walking straight towards me again. I've went over this in my head 100 times, and it just didn't logically make sense for him to turn around because it was only about a quarter of the way through his end of the loop. I was about 3/4 of my way through the loop since we were heading opposite directions. He walked toward me, a lump forming in my throat, and my stomach still turning. As he passed me, he had a look of annoyance on his face. He then saw my hand with my knife in it, and just said once more,
"Take care,"
and just kept walking past me with his dog. Luckily, that was my last encounter with him and the noises I heard. I'm pretty positive there was no woman at all. I don't really know if he was truly a person, or some kind of creature imitating a person, but I don't really care. I think those screams were actually a lure that luckily I didn't fall for. As for the rest of my trip, I hurried quickly out of those woods that day. I do still hike there, and I do still go on that trail, but I now won't do it without my pistol on my hip. I think he planned to trick me into smelling the flowers so he could avoid a fight and then hit me while I was down. God only knows what he would have done. I think because I was armed and I followed my instincts is why I came out of those woods that day. Maybe it doesn't sound so bad in this retelling of my story, but I know what I felt that day. No matter what your gender or size is, you can be a victim if you let yourself be. Always follow your instincts, always be aware of your surroundings, and always be prepared to protect yourself, especially if you're alone in the woods.